Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson and Abby Weinstein. Lori and Abby spend their days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. They talk to parents of struggling students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. They want to share those stories along with their own insights with you. So, let's talk learning disabilities.
Everybody, welcome to episode number 9 of Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. This is Lori Peterson, and with me, as usual, is Abby. Hi, Abby.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Excited to be here. So last episode, which was number 8, we talked a lot about 504. We defined it. We talked about what you get with 504, how to get it, a lot of really great information. So if you haven't listened to that episode, that might be a great place to start, because today we're going to take it a little further. We're going to talk about special education, and we're going to talk a little bit about how special education is different than 504 and how it offers a little bit more of a robust service, services, or is that, am I saying that right?
Mm-hmm. Services.
For kids in school. So Abby, tell us a little bit about special education. If you had a parent say, well, what is special education? How would you define it?
So really, I would start by saying that special education is a step above Section 504 services. It is, like you said, more robust. It involves many more components, a lot more legal components, and it is providing specially designed instruction to students with disabilities that have demonstrated an educational need for this specially designed instruction and curriculum. And there are different qualifications. You have to actually qualify for services through a full and individual evaluation, or what's called an FIE.
Which is performed
by the school district.
By the school. And it's based off, special education is based off the individual's, the IDEA, right? Which is the law.
That's right. The law that governs special education is IDEA, or the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act.
Which is the first way it's different than 504, right?
Because that's right.
504 is a major life function, and it's for your entire lifetime in work and wherever, whereas special education is education.
Right.
And it only covers students ages 3 to 21.11.
That's right. The end of your 21st year at the max.
So if you have a child that's struggling and you want the school, you want to get those kinds of services, the school has to test.
That's right.
And so let's talk about the different ways that you can qualify to receive special education support. The most common way.
Okay. So you have to have a disability. There are two major qualifiers for special education services. One, you have to meet criteria under that IDEA law for one of the disabilities, which there are 13 different disability categories. It is crazy. Whereas 504, it was any type of major impairment, and there weren't specifics necessarily. Whereas under special education services, the Individuals with Disability Education Act, or IDEA, talks about there's 13 disability categories. There is a specific learning disability.
Which is the most common.
Which is the most common.
And even under that, then, there's, what, 8 different learning disabilities?
Absolutely.
Reading, writing, math, language, all that. So that's like...
Yep. You can have a learning disability in 8 different areas, but learning disabilities are the most common. I would say probably the second most common is what's called OHI, or other health impairment. And that's where your impairments such as ADHD fall under, or different health conditions, maybe a Tourette syndrome, or other health conditions, a lot of different chromosomal abnormalities, a lot of those random or rare health conditions, if it impacts you in your everyday performance
and
in school.
So OHI, all those health things, those aren't things the school can actually diagnose.
That's right.
But you still have to have the full evaluation.
That is part of it, is you have to have the full and individual evaluation by the school. However, for to meet criteria under that other health impairment disability category, you have a form that has to be signed off by a physician, typically a medical doctor, which there are some other disability categories that require a signature as well, such as a visual impairment. There has to be signed off by an ophthalmologist or an optometrist or a vision specialist. An auditory impairment is another disability category. And part of that, there has to be some testing done by an audiologist and an otolaryngologist.
I can't say it. No, we know what you're talking about.
Yes, part of the audiological evaluation. Another common disability category under special education services is autism spectrum disorders. It falls under the category called AU. There is also ID, or an intellectual disability, which used to be called, you know, back in the old days, a long time ago, that was mental retardation.
Wasn't that long ago, was it?
It wasn't that long ago. Sadly, I wish it was longer ago. It just changed within the last 5 years.
Such a negative connotation.
Luckily, yes, because mental retardation does have such a negative connotation, it is now called an intellectual disability. There is also a category called OI, or orthopedic impairment. There is a disability category called ED, which stands for emotional disturbance. There is a category called TBI, which stands for traumatic brain injury. There is deaf blind,
which takes your OI and your VI and makes it into one. So auditory impairment, visual impairment, but these are like not just an impairment, full on
deaf and blind.
Right.
That's right. And there is a category called multiple disabilities. And so you have to have three or more disabilities to get part of that qualification.
So here's my question. And I think this is one we hear from a lot of parents, is that, speech impairment.
I didn't even mention that one. Because that is very
common. That's probably the most common.
Yeah.
Articulation.
That is, you know, especially for younger kiddos that are in special education services, I would say that's probably the most common disability category that gets them into special education services. Because in order to get speech therapy, which doesn't really seem like you have a major disability per se, however, to get speech therapy, that falls under special education services.
So working on your THs or your Rs.
Or language skills like grammar and syntax and semantics.
So that leads to what I was going to say, which thank you for remembering the speech impairment, but it just takes one of those. I always tell parents, it takes only one of those to get you in the door. And then once you're kind of in the door, theoretically, you have access to every service that's there, right? So
for the most part,
let's talk about the services that are available once you get through that door. You have a disability. They've determined there's a need for specially designed instruction. So boom, I'm through that door. So now what's available to me?
So I think there are a variety of services. And like you said, most of them are available to any student that is in special education services once you're under that special education umbrella. Probably the most common is speech therapy, as we mentioned before. There is resource classes, which is a smaller class size, usually a low staff to student ratio, and it has to be taught by a special education certified teacher.
And I think that it's important to note, too, that I think that educational support is kind of tiered even under special education, because you can be completely pulled out and put in a resource room.
Absolutely.
Or you can have an inclusion teacher that comes in that works in your room with you as a student. And then you can just have kind of a consult, right?
Right. Or you can just be in your regular classroom just receiving accommodations and no one even knows that you're really getting special education services except the teacher. So, for example, ADHD is so common, and those students that are in special education under other health impairment related to attention deficit hyperactivity disorder or ADHD, many, many of those students only need accommodations that are implemented in their regular classroom, and maybe some social skills instruction. Maybe they get pulled out once a week for some social skills instruction or some study skills instruction. But one thing that is important to note that is also a service technically under special education is that every single student in special education is assigned a case manager. So there is always a special education certified teacher that is a case manager that really oversees your programming, that oversees your progress, that is a good liaison between home and school or between the special education teachers and the general education teachers, and that really is an advocate for the student as well.
And so like 504, there is a document that spells out your services. And that in special education is called an individual education plan or an IEP. Special education is well known for their acronyms.
Oh yeah, we love acronyms.
There are more acronyms than you'll know what to do with.
Yep.
So IEP is your individual education plan, where in 504 it was just an accommodation plan. Because in special education, we are individualizing the education for that student. And in that plan, we've got how many minutes a week they see the special education teacher, the lists of accommodations, if we're going to make any changes to their state testing or standardized testing, things like that. And like 504, but on a much more stringent level, that meeting happens annually as well, right?
That's right. At a minimum, it has to be that IEP meeting has to happen annually at a minimum. And there are so many different legally required components of that individualized education plan that those documents oftentimes are 20 to 25, 28, 30 pages long.
But only like 3 pages might pertain to your kid.
And that's right. There are many aspects of that document that are not always applicable at that time, depending on your age. Right. You know, they might talk about transition or graduation requirements, and that's part of that IEP document, even though your student may be in fifth grade or second grade. But those IEP meetings, you mentioned they have to happen annually, and also the parents are always invited to come and are required actually to provide consent to provide any services that are discussed. So no changes can be made to a child's individual education plan without consent from a parent.
And so what if a parent disagrees?
If a parent disagrees, they have the right to file a complaint. They can first of all just disagree and say with the rest of the school staff, so typically the administrators there, a regular teacher, a special ed teacher, anyone who provides a service to the student, they can just disagree at the end of the meeting and say, you know, I disagree with the services you proposed, or I disagree with the evaluation. If they disagree with the evaluation, they're entitled to request what's called an independent educational evaluation.
And this is really important. We're going to take a second and talk about this, because we actually see a lot of those in what we do. So I'm a parent, the school has done testing. I disagree with some aspect. I can disagree with the diagnosis. I may agree with the diagnosis, but I may disagree with some of the scores. I don't think they're accurate, or my child was sick or hungry or whatever, and so I don't think they did their very best. I can disagree too, though, with the way that they interpreted the information. There's like a whole host of things I can disagree with, right?
That's right.
And at that point then, as a parent, I can say, I want a second opinion. I want an outside evaluation. And right then and there, then the school agrees. Typically they have to, right?
They have to agree to allowing you to have an independent educational evaluation.
And you get to pick who does it. It can be somebody outside of the schools who's not related to the school, who doesn't have a relationship or connection.
Right. The school district typically provides you a list of people that they have on their independent evaluators list that you can choose from, but you essentially can choose anyone you want.
As long as they're qualified.
As they're, right.
And then the school pays for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take that back to the school, and now you've got either supporting information for how the parent feels, or sometimes we find that the school had it right.
Mm-hmm.
Their information, we got the same thing.
Absolutely.
Which is frustrating sometimes for the parent. But a lot of parents don't realize that they have that right to say, this is not okay. I want a second opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel like they just have to accept whatever the school is telling them.
you know, speaking of parents' rights, special education, the parent has to give consent to be evaluated for special education. Then, even before any special education services are provided, they have to provide consent for their child to be placed in special education under that umbrella to receive any services. And then again, they have to agree to the services that are being proposed. So there are many times throughout the special education process that the parents have a right to say yes or no, and they have to provide their consent and agree or disagree to what's being proposed.
So I got you off track there. So we talked about if they disagree with the evaluation, but if they disagree with the services, if they want more services, less services, what have you, then what is their, what can they do?
So I think what happens most often is the school is going to try to meet you halfway and try to mediate, usually just have another meeting, give you some time to think about your services, propose different services. There is, at the end of a meeting, if the parent disagrees with what's being proposed, then technically the school can say, let's recess for 10 days, for not more than 10 days, and let's see if we can come up with some other ideas. The parent can come up with other ideas and bring those to the table to the next meeting. The school can come up with other ideas and bring those to the table. And then you reconvene that meeting, that IEP meeting, and you start discussing again what is going to be appropriate and best for the student.
So the school's goal is to kind of make everybody happy.
Yeah,
they're not
exactly
out to like
do really
what's wrong for your child. If you truly have a problem with something they're proposing, talk about it. Like, don't feel like you. Yeah, I think those meetings, and that's one thing we probably didn't talk about last week, those meetings are overwhelming.
They are overwhelming.
There's a lot of acronyms being thrown around. There's a lot of people on the other side of the table, some of which you've never laid eyes on before.
That's right.
And so as a parent, you'll often sit there and think, oh, I'm just going to have to sign it and leave. Like, they don't care what I think.
Mm-hmm.
But they really do. And it's okay to speak up. It's okay to disagree. It's okay to ask questions.
Right. And I think it is so important for the parents to really be well informed. And I really do. When I was a school diagnostician with the public schools, I prided myself on making sure that the parent was fully informed and really understood everything. Again, like you said, there's a million and one acronyms out there. You know, I would hope the school would take an extra few minutes to explain what those different acronyms stand for and make sure the parent understands what's being proposed, what's being discussed. So if you are a parent of a student that's in special education services, when you go to those meetings, don't be afraid to ask questions or to say, let's stop for a minute, let's slow down, or can you explain this further or in greater depth?
And they are doing hundreds of those a year, right? So that staff, they are flying through that paperwork. They're just running through it because they could do it in their sleep.
Right. They are doing
so many. But for the parent, it's once a year.
Right. It's their one time to really.
And so you've got to ask questions. You have to make sure you understand, because once you sign off, now, just because you signed off doesn't mean you can't change something.
Make changes, right?
You can always make changes.
You can always make changes. Excuse me. And as I mentioned before, I think it's important for parents to know that the changes cannot be made without their consent. So some changes require an actual formal meeting. Again, the IEP team comes back together and meets around a table. Some changes can be made with parent consent over the phone. So like an accommodation, changing from, you know, extra time to no longer needing extra time, or adding in the use of a calculator or manipulatives. So a lot of simple accommodations can be agreed upon by phone and don't require a meeting. However, they do always require the parent's consent. Any change to your child's special education plan or IEP has to have your consent or the guardian's consent.
So as a parent, can I, if I decide that we don't need it anymore and I want my child done with special education, is that something I have the right to do?
Absolutely. You can, you just like you had to provide consent for special education services, you can revoke that consent at any time. So at any time that you decide you don't want your child in special education for whatever reason, you have that right to say. And I think the only thing the school requires is that you provide that in writing. And all you have to do is say, I no longer want my child in special education services. receiving special education.
Let's talk about the benefits, like the pros and the cons. Okay. So okay. The benefits of being in special education, especially for a student that has a more severe disability, The benefits are amazing because you get that, you get services, which we shockingly got off task. But the services could be anything. They can be speech therapy, like you talked about. They can be physical therapy, occupational therapy, music therapy. Mm-hmm. They have social skills, counseling, and then academically speaking, like we talked about, you can be pulled out and work in a small group. Mm-hmm. The state does require, though, now that everyone is working on
grade level curriculum always.
So they can't take you back and practice first grade math skills if you're in fifth grade.
Well, and I think they can help you with lower level skills if that's where your gaps lie. Again, it is an individualized education plan. So if your student is far behind grade level in reading skills or math skills, their teachers can work on those lower level skills. However, they can't only work on lower level skills. So many, many years ago, kids could sit in a special education classroom and color worksheets all day long and rarely make progress and rarely achieve even close to their grade level expectations.
They just fell further behind.
They fell further behind and then they stayed there forever and it was harder and harder to get out of special education and they, like you said, they fell farther behind. Now, what part of the law did was say, we have to provide these students grade level curriculum and raise the expectations. And what's really cool about that is that in my experience, when we raised the expectations and we really did start providing more rigorous instruction to students in special education, they rose to the expectations.
That's awesome.
They showed us, hey, I may have a learning disability. I may have some kind of disability, but I am capable of making good progress and making gains.
If you'll just push me.
If you'll push me. Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So yep. I think the academic support is the one that most people are familiar with. Now, they have, once you are in the door and you have access to these services, you can request like an occupational therapy evaluation or a physical therapy evaluation, but it doesn't guarantee you'll get it.
That's right.
You still have to show a need and your fine motor deficit or whatever has to be at a level that they feel like whatever,
it has to keep you from achieving your individualized goals that are set out for you.
Perfect. Okay.
Yeah.
So
those related services that you have to qualify for, like physical therapy and occupational therapy and counseling, they have to show that the child cannot make adequate progress without the addition of this related service of occupational therapy or physical therapy.
So another question, when we talked about 504, we talked about how there's a lot of private schools that are offering similar type programs, you know, it's not 504, but it's their accommodation plan. Mm-hmm. Private schools don't offer special education because this is a federally funded program, but they can go to the public school to get an evaluation.
That's right. That's a good point.
They can also go to the public school. Usually the only type of service you can get is speech therapy. If you go and get a full evaluation from the public school and you're not a student there, they can tell you all the things that they would be able to provide if you were a student
if
there.
If you enrolled, right.
But not enrolling prohibits you from receiving those. So like a dyslexic student or somebody with a math disability can't just swing by the public school every day and get some math help.
Right.
They can make the diagnosis. Now, we did not talk much about timelines. We touched on it, but there are a lot of stringent timelines. Mm-hmm. And even private school students who request any kind of service or evaluation still has to adhere to that timeline. And I think timelines are probably the most frustrating part of the whole process, mm-hmm. because there's no wiggle room.
Like right.
You have so many days to get a notice out and so many days to complete an evaluation and then so many days. So do you mind running through just a couple of the big timelines?
And you're right. It is frustrating because that for a parent, if your child is struggling and you finally hear, we are going to evaluate your child and try to figure out what's going on and provide help, you want that to happen as soon as possible. You want it to happen sooner rather than later. However, for an evaluation, for example, for a full and individual evaluation, the school has 45 school days, and that's school days. So take out the weekends, take out those President Day holidays and Martin Luther King
spring break.
Because it does make sense. They can't evaluate your child when they don't have access to your child because they're not in school. However, 45 school days can look like 3 months sometimes, and it can take a long time. And because the schools are evaluating so many students, it oftentimes does take that whole entire 45 school day timeline.
And that's just to finish the evaluation. Then what's the timeline to actually tell you about it?
And then from the time the evaluation is written, from that date when it's completed, they have 30 calendar days to meet together with you to review the results and come up with that proposed individualized education plan.
So this theoretically could take an entire semester.
It could take a whole semester of school to get your child special education services. Theoretically, yes, it could.
Or just to find out if they even have a disability.
To find out if they have a disability.
And then to get to that point and disagree. Mm-hmm. We hear stories of kids that have lost an entire year trying to navigate this process. So it's frustrating. And while we understand the timelines and there are definitely reasons for them, to a parent, it doesn't matter.
Right.
They have a kid that's struggling.
Exactly. So, and I think that's part of the clients we see here is that they may be enrolled in public school and their child is struggling and they've watched them struggle for a while and they are desperate for help. And so they don't want to always wait for the school to finish their evaluation once they hear that they have that long of a timeline.
Well, no, and we have a lot of parents that have signed off and said, yes, please test my child. And they're halfway through the timeline and just can't take it anymore. So mm-hmm. they're like, forget it. We'll do it ourselves.
We'll go private, right?
And yeah, it works out a lot better for them usually.
That's right.
So then once they get placed into the services, then the new timelines of meeting year annually to review.
Yeah, the individualized education plan has to be reviewed every year on or before that anniversary date. So if you meet for the very first time on February 24th of this year, 2021, then they have to meet no matter what. You have to meet again on or before February 24th of the next year to review that plan, ensure the child's making adequate progress, talk about proposed services, accommodations, different things like that. Now, the evaluation also, the school is required to reevaluate your child every 3 years at a minimum. You can request it sooner. So that is an important thing to note. If you feel like, you know, they've made a ton of progress, I don't see the gaps I'm seeing anymore, I'm not sure if they still really would demonstrate or meet the criteria for a learning disability, or I'm not sure if that learning disability is still there, you can request an evaluation at any time. But the school is required, no matter what, at a minimum to reevaluate, every 3 years.
But now do they have to do a full reevaluation?
They don't have to do a full evaluation. There is a meeting that reviews the existing evaluation data and determines what areas do we need to retest formally, what areas can we reassess informally through the school data, teacher data, you know, those informal assessments, state testing, things like that. So they don't have to do that whole formal, full and individual evaluation again. They have to write up a full and individual evaluation and have all the required components, but it's not always formal testing. So if I was a parent and it was 3 years later and my child had been diagnosed with a specific learning disability, I would want all that formal testing done again. Think how much a child can change in 3 years. Even a middle schooler or high school student, they can make a lot of gains and change a lot within 3 years. Now, they can make a lot of gains. They could also fall farther behind. And I would want to ensure that this school is providing everything my child needs to make sure they are making progress and not falling farther behind.
Well, and that also speaks to those high school kids that are going to want to use that documentation to get extra time on the SAT or ACT. If it's not real, full testing, not informal, but formal, those people won't, you know, SAT, ACT, they're not going to accept it. They're still going to want that testing done. So
right.
I know schools are typically better about high school kids trying to give them more formal testing for those reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Only in special education, that's not a 504 thing. it's part of special education.
Right. They almost always do formal testing on all those high schoolers before they graduate. So they have it. So for college.
The negatives, or what some people might say is like the downside of special education.
I think the stigma one, I mean, I think it is a lot of people interpret that label special education or my child being in special education or SPED for short as negative. And so it does have this negative connotation, which I think, again, some of that goes back to the olden days when you were in special education. People knew you, right. You went to a special room. Sorry about that. You went to a special room in the back corner of the school and you stayed there for multiple hours and you sat in a different table in the lunchroom.
Right. It's way different now.
It is way different. So there is not necessarily as much negative stigma, but I think that is one of the negatives. Another one is that it is indicated on your report card or on your transcript if you're in a resource classroom, for example, where you have that small group instruction, even though it's still grade level instruction, again, like we said, it is maybe less rigorous. The teacher teaches at a slower pace, uses simpler vocabulary, can differentiate, bring in manipulatives and all different formats of teaching. That is going to be indicated on the transcript if it is a resource classroom. So it actually can change their graduation option if they're in one of those, if the curriculum is being really modified in that sense.
And so those kids then that have that special education identification, even just your learning disabled kids who are getting some resource support, right? Mm-hmm. Getting pulled out or taking a special education algebra class or biology class, then that's on the transcript. And that typically means that they're going to be better suited to start at like a junior college or a community college to get some college experience under their belt before they head off to a four-year school, because that changes their, like you said, it
the
changes
graduation
their options.
Yep.
And they're not graduating with a standard graduation plan.
Right. And their expectations for graduation, the requirements they have to meet are changed, and they're based back to that IEP, that individualized education plan, rather than the typical graduation requirements that most of the typically developing non-special education students have.
The services that take us through the age of 21, though, that's not resource or academic. That becomes more for your more severely disabled kids that need more job training or more self-help and daily functional living skills. And that's available usually at a separate campus or in a different location as after they graduate from high school, that carries them through the age of 21. And there's lots of transitioning that's happening and mm-hmm. planning for that 22nd birthday. They don't just throw them out and dump them on, you know, so
right,
they were done.
Right.
There's a plan for what's going to happen after they leave when they turn 22. And it's
yes.
really, that to me is amazing. Those kids that get that level of support, I think it's one of the best parts of special education, because I do feel like those kids, parents don't realize the benefit mm-hmm. of that when you have a child that has either multiple disabilities or an intellectual disability.
You know, actually, I think it's important to note too, that even if your child just has, they're in special education under other health impairment related to ADHD, or they have a learning disability and they don't even go to a resource classroom or an extra classroom, no matter what, there still is some transition planning done. So, part of that law, which I'm not going to go into great detail on transition planning, but basically when your child, before your child turns 14, usually 13 going on 14, part of their individual plan is going to include transition planning. So that case manager is going to start talking to your child about what are your interests? What are your career goals? What are your plans after high school? So it's cool. It gets them to start thinking about that. So that way then in high school, you can encourage them to choose electives and courses that are going to help their career goals or their goals, their after high school goals. So that is one awesome feature of special education. I think that transition planning piece that is available to all students, and it's required actually. So you start seeing those graduation plans and those 4-year plans included in that individual education plan.
And I agree. And I think when we talk about transitioning, it's either transitioning to college or transitioning to work, mm-hmm. whatever you're going to do when you graduate, mm-hmm. or are you going to transition to more of an extended
high school experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I do, I agree. I think that's an amazing service that's offered. And again, I don't think parents realize it. And that's a great place too for, don't the kids then start attending those annual meetings too at that point?
That's right. Exactly. They're required to attend unless the parent disagrees. Again, the parent can say, I don't want my child to be a part of their meeting, but they, at 14 years old, they start attending those annual IEP meetings so that they can advocate for their own needs and have a voice in their educational plan. And it is really cool to see, you know, students start saying, I need this accommodation because I reread things over and over again, so it takes me longer. Or I don't like having my test read to me anymore because it's more distracting to me, or I can't focus, or I go ahead anyways. I move on ahead with the reader.
It teaches self-advocacy, which is so important in all aspects of life, but it starts to get them to speak for themselves and know that they have a voice and they have a say.
Absolutely.
Really quick, the one thing we didn't mention before we wrap up is that if you are in the state of Texas, for some reason, the state of Texas has taken this whole process and turned it into what everyone refers to as an ARD meeting. And ARD stands for Admission, Review, and Dismissal. Those are the three things that can happen in an IEP meeting. You can mm-hmm. admit someone into special education. Annually, you review their progress. And at some point, hopefully or not, you might get dismissed. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know where that started, but it's a little bit confusing
because
when parents come here from out of state, they're like, what is an ARD? And I don't think it's in any other state that I'm aware of, but I just think that's an interesting little tidbit.
I'm not aware of what states it's in, but I know, like you said, in Texas, it is an ARD meeting, and parents oftentimes get confused going back to that being fully informed. Ask questions and understand what's going on with your child, because 504 services are one thing, but special education, if you're having an ARD meeting or ARD, Admission Review and Dismissal Committee meeting, then your child is in special education and they are not in 504. You will never be in both programs.
That's what I was just going to say. Can you be in them concurrently?
No. So you're either in 504 and you're getting services under 504 and you have that individual accommodation plan under 504, or you are in special education and you're receiving an individualized education plan or an IEP.
And some kids get dismissed from special education and placed in 504 mm-hmm. because it's just another, it's a lighter level of support. It keeps that safety net.
That's right.
But it's kind of like, it's almost like their transition.
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah. And that is always an option, you know, if you feel like your child no longer needs that really intensive, specially designed instruction and you don't want them in special education, you can still ask for 504 services and receive some accommodations that way, if that's all your child needs.
So we covered a lot of stuff today. We covered a lot of stuff last week. So please, if you have questions, do not hesitate to email us. letstalklearningdisabilities@gmail.com. We are happy to help.
For sure.
It still is overwhelming. Even to those of us who have done it for forever and we understand the system, it's still, there are times that I think that doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. And there is so much. So please, I would love for you, if you have a question or you feel overwhelmed by all of this or just need some reiteration of any of the aspects we discussed, email us.
Or if you have a special situation that we didn't cover or that's going on with you that you just need, you know, to pick our brain, we're happy to help. So feel free to email us. Abby, thanks for today. This was great information. I know that we'll end up circling back about all of this again sometime soon, but this at least kind of lays the groundwork for everybody.
Definitely.
Thanks so much for being here today, everybody. We'll see you guys at episode 10.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.